Penguin Random House Audio presents On Swift Horses by Shannon Pufall. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell and MacLeod Andrews. For Dorothy Figgs, my grandmother and a first-rate card player. The Declaration of Love marks the transition from chance to destiny, and that's why it is so perilous and so burdened. Alain Badiou, In Praise of Love.
An honest game has always been a great rarity. Herbert Asbury. Sucker's Progress, An Informal History of Gambling in America.
Part 1. Chapter 1. The Sea. At the Heyday Lounge, the horsemen think they are the only gamblers. They file in each morning, their shoes dusty and their pockets jangling with coins like parishioners. They sit in a dark corner under a single-blade fan, a plantation relic hauled from the lounge owner's southern home to this coastal city 30 miles from Mexico. Above them, the fan has the look of salvage, but it makes no sound. And though it keeps the flies from their faces and necks and mid-morning cocktails, they do not notice it. Every weekday, the men come. They speak openly because they believe the lounge owner to be simple, which is true, and Muriel, their waitress these long mornings, to be a woman and therefore incapable of both memory and complex reasoning. It does not help that she is young, that she looks like the empty plains she comes from, flat and open and sad. She and Lee, newly married, have been in San Diego only a few months, and are learning slowly how to be modern. And though she has always worked, it is fair that the horsemen take her for a housewife forced into labor by circumstance. They could not know from her wide shoulders and square waist and rural modesty that she had taken the bus from Kansas on her own, that she could play cards and drive a car, or that she'd left behind a house she owned outright to come here. So they wave their hands at her and call her sweetheart from across the room and order their drinks with pointed enunciation as if she were hard of hearing, though she remembers not only their drinks but the clip of their mustaches, the red-rimmed dimness of their eyes. She writes the orders down on a notepad and hands the paper to the bartender. The horsemen are retired trainers from the furlongs at Del Mar or bookmakers for rich men in the coastal hills. A few are ex-jockeys, burned out and overweight, unsure what else life might have to offer them. They talk as men do, confident and gently adversarial, about the coming race day, the horses off their feed, the jockeys with tapeworm, the cup and feel of the track. They set long odds and argue over them. For a few months, Muriel listens. She writes down their private speculations and begins to join their language to its objects. When her shift ends at 2, she walks toward the sea and takes a late lunch at a restaurant where she works a second job on the dinner shift. She sits in a booth in the corner and studies her notes and the previous day's racing form. She might rise and walk then along the rolling line of surf. She thinks of horses and her mother and the day she was married. As she walks, she collects shells and beach glass and slips them in the pocket of her sweater. Before she returns to work, she unfolds the pocket and dumps these same items back onto the beach. So all that's left is a rim of sand in the pocket hem. At 10, Lee walks to the restaurant from the factory a few blocks away, and they go home together. Arms linked like young lovers and not like married people, because they do not know each other very well. Then, in early December, Muriel has a night off from the restaurant, but tells Lee she's working. In the drugstore across the street from the Heyday Lounge, she buys a pair of sunglasses she considers ridiculous. They cover her eyebrows and half of her nose and make her look much older, like a woman in possession of a fortune or a married lover. She buys a sun hat and a thin scarf printed with flowers. She removes her sweater, though her arms show, and she worries they will burn in the low winter sun and make her sleep difficult. She takes a 20-minute bus ride to the Del Mar Fairgrounds. The bus winds around Jimmy Durante Boulevard, and from the windows of the bus she can see the grand entrance to the track, the high hedges and the waving flags. A statue of Bing Crosby, the track's founder and financier, gleams hard and gold in the afternoon light. In San Diego, in those days, it was said that Crosby used the track to impress Grace Kelly, who hated horses but loved men. Muriel lets the bus wind back around to Camino del Mar and gets out to have a coffee in a diner along the beach. She smokes and looks around as if she is waiting for someone. Her shoulders are warm, and the bridge of her nose sweats under the sunglasses. The sea is soft and cold-looking. From the beach, several others watch as a woman wades out to the breakers and stops. Muriel thinks of her mother, who had told her about the shore at Galveston, where she had been once with a man Muriel knew was not her father. Her mother said the sea was smooth as a lake and brown, and that someone told her it was filled with jellyfish. Muriel watches as the woman at sea turns and lifts a hand to her forehead and seems to regard the shore in contemplation of some final leaving. It is a curious thing, being married, how Muriel must think of this odd afternoon errand as something done for both of them. An adventure Lee will share in one way or another. She had thought it would be difficult to lie to him, but she found it easier than their daily recitations of the truth. She had expected for herself the same power her mother found in men, but she often finds her husband's gaze embarrassing. Finally, she stands and walks up the seaside street and back across Durante. She passes the high hedges and the tall gates and walks past the turf club and the runs. At the turnstile, she crowds in with another woman and two men. The warden in the booth waves them through. She climbs the stairs behind the three others and lets them break off in the stands. From this height, she looks around. She is surprised by how many people are at the track and how many of them are drunk. The sailors clump together and slap each other's backs. Their heavy white pants hang to their heels, and they laugh and push back their vigorous hair. There are men in ripped shoes and young boys in bow ties, and there are many other women, too, Muriel is glad to see. She sits under the second floor balcony in the shade and covers her hair with the scarf. From the stands, the horses are not what she imagined. They are tall and obdurate and only lightly controlled. A dozen of them are paced out and lined behind the gates. The field is looped first in grass, then dirt, a third smaller track built for harness racing and unused. Across the field, the stables are lined in courtly rows, and from this height, Muriel can see the sharp shadows thrown by the palms over the hot walkers and the low-roofed stalls. The smell of the dirt and the stables and the weedy smell of the grass are familiar to her, though from the sea comes a punkish wind. She has a gimlet and studies the racing form, thinking of the words she's heard the horsemen use, the names of trainers and jockeys. She watches the men file to the betting windows along the aisle. For a long time, she watches without seeing any woman approach the glass, and she begins to worry that perhaps she is not allowed to bet at all. The horses rear in their gates. Their bridles clang against the gates and sound like vespers. Then the gunshot and the race begins. The men in the stands yell instructions at the huge dark horses in a language of violence rolled in with endearment. Some are up. Take it. Ride that. Break, baby. The dust and the noise are thrilling, and Muriel stands without thinking and watches the horses turn the track. the pounding of their hooves that...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?